You're listening to a message delivered at the Fountains, a United Methodist Church in Fountain Hills, Arizona.
She may not be a household name, but the 14th century mystic, theologian, and plague survivor Julian of Norwich deserves to be, at least among those of us who claim to be progressive Christians in the 21st century. That's why my colleague Jeff Proctor Murphy and I are going to take the next couple of months to delve into Matthew Fox's new book, Julian of Norwich, Wisdom in a Time of Pandemic and Beyond. Living through wave after wave of the Black Plague, Julian knew what it meant to deal with fear, uncertainty, and death. Yet, as we'll find out, she managed to keep coming back over and over again to the mantra she is best known for: all will be well, all will be well, all manner of things will be well. Even in the midst of one of the most horrific plagues humanity has ever had to face, Julian managed to hold on to hope, and with a level of conviction that's hard to grasp, managed to hold on to the notion that God is love, and for her, nothing else mattered. So for our readings today, we're going to hear from two texts, the first being from Julian's writings, Revelations of Divine Love, where she declares her unambiguous and relentless belief in God, and God alone being all she ever needs in life. Our second text is from the first of the three, what are called Johannine epistles. All three seem to have been written by the same author, although nobody agrees on who that was. While it may have been written about the same time as the Gospel of John, between 95 and 110 of the Common Era, internal evidence like theme, style, vocabulary, make it unlikely to have been written by the author of the Gospel or the Revelation of John. One thing for sure, there's controversy afoot. The Christian community of John's day is fracturing, and the author is trying to focus the hearers on one core value, love, going so far as saying that God is, in fact, love. And if you don't love one another, then what's the point? So check out these two readings, one declaring that God is love, and the other asserting that God is all a person needs. One might be tempted to quote the great theologian John Lennon and simply say, love is all you need.
Our words of wisdom are from Julian's Revelations of Divine Love, chapter 5, and 1 John chapter 4, verses 7 and 8. God of your goodness, give me yourself. You are enough for me, and anything less that I could ask for would not do you full honor. And if I ask for anything that is less, I shall always lack something. But in you alone, I have everything.
Beloved, let us love one another, because love is from God. Everyone who loves is born of God and knows God. Whoever does not love does not know God, for God is love.
Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church.
Thanks be to God.
On June 14, 1889, an ancient document by a little-known English mystic was purchased at Sotheby's auction house. Long thought to have been lost to the mists of time, it was the sole surviving medieval copy of what's called the Short Text, a writing by the Christian contemplative Julian of Norwich, likely completed after her recovery from a serious illness 500 years before. After Julian died in 1429, her writings were at first forgotten and later hidden, as her ideas were, by any measure, heretical by the standards of her day. Fast forward to today, and her ideas may very well still be considered heretical by some, but for those who have ears to hear, Dame Julian of Norwich has much to teach us in the 21st century. That's why Matthew Fox's most recent book, focused on Julian, will be our guide to her thinking in the coming weeks. Some of you will recognize Matthew Fox as a contributor to the original Living the Question series. But long before that, he has been a huge influence on my thinking. I'll always remember over 30 years ago, sitting around a campfire deep in the outback of Western Australia, the blackest sky and brightest stars I'd ever seen above us, musing with friends about the controversy stirred up by Fox's book, Original Blessing, when it first came out. Why controversial? Because much of traditional Christianity's power depends on people believing in original sin, the idea that creation and humanity are not inherently good, but evil and in need of redemption. The church is able to control people by saying, "You're sick, and we've got the only cure." But the alternative of the mystics, including Julian of Norwich, is called creation spirituality. And it replaces the idea of a vengeful, punitive God with a loving God that blesses us beyond our imaginations. And for the audacity to point out that original sin is bunk and that we're not originally sinful, but originally blessed, Fox was expelled from the Dominican order in which he was a priest. So, for those of you who know me, Fox being excommunicated is another reason I admire him. Where can I get on that official heretic list? So, I hope you're as excited as I am to be on this journey together, studying the visions of a heretic woman that are interpreted by an excommunicated heretic priest and preached by a couple of heretic Methodists. But before we begin, some background on Julian. Born in Norwich, England, in 1342, Julian endured the first wave of the plague in 1349 when she was only 7 years old. The Black Death had already spread across the globe, from Mongolia through India, Persia, Syria, Egypt, and Italy. It was beyond horrific. So many people died that they were buried five deep in mass graves. The garbage piled up because all the street cleaners in London died. Because they were serving the sick and dying face to face, two out of three clergy were dead. Fear and xenophobia drove riots that included a Valentine's Day massacre in Germany where 2,000 Jews were burned alive. One way ports tried to slow the spread was by forcing sailors to stay on their ships after anchoring. They were only allowed to come ashore if they showed no symptoms after 40 days. And since the Italian word for 40 days is quarantina, we now have the word quarantine. Just imagine the fear. If you contracted the disease, you'd typically be dead in 3 to 4 days. Done. It was transmitted by fleas and rats and was airborne to boot. It was so contagious that even touching infected clothes days later could be fatal. You could go to bed healthy one night and be dead by morning. The plague was terrifying and ugly and was the defining experience of Julian's life. And no wonder, over her lifetime, she lived through multiple surges of the bubonic plague and witnessed unspeakable suffering firsthand. Some 50% of the population of Europe died during the Black Death. But she didn't just witness suffering, she experienced it too. When she was 30, she suffered a horrible illness, possibly the bubonic plague. Tormented by a high fever on what she perceived to be her deathbed, a priest brought her a crucifix. Contemplating Christ on the cross, she experienced 16 distinct visions she called showings, where she perceived Jesus to be speaking with her. And like any good mystic, she was full of questions. She asked Jesus, "What is sin? What is suffering? Does God really love us? Does God punish us?" What she came away with was a profoundly visceral understanding of unconditional love and a total lack of blame or anger. She was utterly convicted of God's love in Christ, enfolding and cherishing us. After she recovered, she put pen to paper and wrote the short text. Then, over the next 40 or 50 years, she edited and re-edited the material, culminating in a second extended version called Revelations of Divine Love. There were very few copies of Julian's writings made. What we possess today are handwritten versions, of which only three copies survive. Even though the first printing press began operation in 1476, no copies of Julian's writings were printed until the 17th century. First off, her work was considered heretical by some, and the fact that she was a champion of the divine feminine in a century when patriarchy ruled didn't add to her popularity. But today, we can look back and see her as a genuine pioneer of the English language. Not only was she the very first woman to write a book in the English language, she even coined brand new English words, including the word enjoy. We don't know a lot more about her. She may have been a mother herself, having lost her family to the plague. She was obviously well-educated, evidently having been educated by the Benedictines and likely having encountered the Dominicans who introduced her to the theology of Thomas Aquinas and Meister Eckhart. In many icons and artwork portraying Julian, you'll often see her with a cat. Is she the patron saint of cats or something? No, that's Saint Gertrude. It's mainly another nod to the Black Death. Julian's order allowed its members to keep a cat for pest control, particularly to keep down the carriers of plague, like rats and mice. But one thing we do know for sure, in her day and for centuries to follow, she was misunderstood. In the midst of the plague, many believed that nature had turned on them and that God was punishing them. As Thomas Berry points out, people had no explanation for what was happening. They knew nothing of germs. They could only figure that the world had grown wicked. But despite the fear and death all around her, Julian refused to yield to despair and sought out the goodness of life, grounding herself in gratitude for the gift of creation. Now, all this isn't to say she would have been an easy person to get along with. For context, she was what was called an anchorite. In describing anchorites, author Thomas Cahill points out that they're no longer an everyday occurrence and that he'd only met one in his life and she was nutty as a fruitcake. But in the Middle Ages, they were much more common. Cahill continues, "The word anchorite derives from a Greek verb meaning to withdraw, and we may best think of them as hermits who lived not in obscure caves, but in association with a religious community. Your typical anchorite would normally reside in a small room built into the wall of an abbey church or cathedral, a room with a view, so to speak, a slit or screened window that allowed the anchorite to attend church services and receive the Eucharist, but not so large as to make her visible to the merely curious." Cahill points out that the liturgy for the consecration of an anchorite was actually a funeral service, for it was deemed that she was dying to the world and to herself. The idea was to serve God by permanent retreat from the world. In Julian's day, Norwich was a bustling center of commerce, second only to London, and Julian's church was right in the heart of the city. So even though she was secluded in her cell, she could see the church through one window and the city square through another. So as Matthew Fox says, Julian knew a thing or two about sheltering in place. So here we are taking our first cautious steps into public, watching the increasing spread of the Delta variant, and still trying to comprehend how wearing a mask or getting a vaccine has become so politicized. And Matthew Fox asks, who knows the possibilities that await a renewed humanity, one that has gone through the fire of the dark night together? Along with the tragic death toll, the pandemic has exposed inequities too massive to be denied. We have an extraordinary opportunity to move beyond what was considered normal. Like Julian, we have an opportunity, as Fox says, to not take things for granted, to be still, and in that process, reevaluate our lives and our culture. Across the centuries, even in the trauma of her own pandemic, Julian refused to give in to fear or blame and sought out beauty and goodness, reminding us that the fullness of joy is to behold the divine in everything. In everything? According to Julian, everything, even a pandemic. A few weeks ago, New York Times columnist David Brooks closed his commencement address to the Boston College class of 2021 by saying, "A year ago, when everything was shut down, I thought this year's college seniors were the unluckiest generations. But they could be the luckiest. They've survived something hard and have the strength that comes from that experience. They enter a world that's been interrupted and have the opportunity to create a different and more humane way of life." All of us had that same opportunity. And I'm looking forward to having Julian of Norwich, cat in hand, guide us along the way, fostering in us a spirituality that isn't just about survival, but a spirituality that strengthens us to live out the call Jesus has placed on our lives, no matter the challenge. All will be well. All will be well. All manner of things will be well.
Thanks for listening to this week's Applying It to Life from the Fountains. For more information or to support this outreach with a donation, visit www.weputlovefirst.org.